So I don't know about you, but towards the evening, I feel like I want less input, less discursive. Something about absorbing or just being with how I'm feeling. And often stuff might have got stirred up, or there might be a lot of energy or feelings. And for me, that's where devotional practice can be really helpful. It's almost like I'm letting go of just that more rational, cognitive part of my mind. I'm surrendering to, more of my creative, unconscious mind and the part of me that doesn't need to conceptualize everything, understand everything, just surrendering to a different level of experience. Yeah. So we did talk a bit about faith, didn't we, in terms of craving leading to suffering, suffering leading to faith, and faith in Buddhism being this word shraddha, and it being more about confidence or where we place our heart, what's most meaningful, and sort of following that thread, that what resonates with us in terms of the values, the qualities that we experience through our spiritual practice. So for some people, it's quite a strong strand to feel a connection with the Buddha or one of the archetypal Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. And you can spend a lot of time trying to understand what they are or explain what they are or how you're relating to them and are they real or in your imagination. In a way, for me, I'd stop bothering about all of that. I find it helpful to, in my imagination, but not in my, just in my imagination, to feel a kind of relationship to some of these figures, to look up to them in terms of the qualities they embody, to be inspired by them. And because there's often a lot of imagery associated with them, it's a different kind of language, a different part of myself that responds to them. And when we're doing rituals, when we're chanting mantras, in a way, we're tapping into some of that different language, yeah, that may not make sense, but we feel or experience. So one of the archetypal Buddhas is called Amitabha. Some of you may know him, the Red Buddha of the West. He's particularly associated with meditation, with compassion, with beauty, and transforming craving, actually. But he doesn't transform craving by we just have to cut off all the craving, but it's more like that faith. You have a craving for things that are of more value, that are more important, that have more depth, more, there, rather than just craving a chocolate bar or craving, all the sort of more everyday things that we might be craving. There's a different level to that craving, yet that you're being drawn to something that's more meaningful, more transformative, more transcendental, maybe, if you want to use that kind of language. So it's not that you're going away from something, that's sort of more like coming out of that aversion and just walking away from it and path of renunciation. But it's more that you're moving towards something that you find beautiful and meaningful. Anyway. And one of the things about Amitabha is it said that if you call his name, you can be reborn in his pure land, which is a sort of, it's what's called a Buddha field, is anything that's under the sphere or the influence of a Buddha. And we have perfect Buddha fields and imperfect Buddha fields. So we're living in an imperfect Buddha field. because there has been a Buddha. We do still have the teachings and practicing, and we're still under the influence of the Buddha. But in the sort of archetypal realms, each Buddha is supposed to create their own pure land where, if you're reborn there, you're, everything there is a reminder. It's much more positive conditions for your awakening, and your awakening on a sort of shorter time scale, I guess. I don't know. That's a very limited understanding explanation of that. But anyway, one of the things about Amitabha is that it's said that, you know, if you call his name, you'll be reborn in Sukhavati, his particular pure land. And there are whole schools of Buddhism which are based on pure land Buddhism and chanting Amitabha's name. He's a very popular Buddha. So when we chant a mantra, often it's the name of one of these archetypal Buddhas or Bodhisattvas or even the historical Buddha, or it's about a particular quality that we might be trying to connect with or cultivate. And so when we're chanting Amitabhas, we're connecting with the figure of Amitabha and all the things that he represents and all the ways that he can inspire us, and also that quality of compassion. So we're going to do chanting a mantra as a practice. We talked a little bit about how lots of things could be practiced, that sometimes we think of just meditation being practice, but actually our whole lives are practice, you know. And everything that we do is an opportunity for practice, but there are specific areas of practice, like areas like ethical practice, meditation practice, devotional practice that we might be doing if we're Dharma practitioners, yes, following the path, the teachings of the Buddha. And mantras are quite interesting because, especially if we chant them in Sanskrit or Pali or Tibetan or a language that's not familiar to us, it doesn't make sense, so we doesn't get our thinking, rational mind engaged. We just can, in a way, relate to it in terms of the sounds and the vibrations and the feel in our body as we chant it, and the sound coming through our ears of ourselves and others chanting it. And chanting is something that we can do individually at home, and also it's really powerful if you're in a room with other people and you're doing collective mantra chanting. And something quite mysterious happens there, where people come together in that chanting. There's a real sense of connection in the chanting. And if there's disharmony in the group, then the chanting's probably not going to be that great. But mostly it sort of brings together and there's a nice connection energy. So on Zoom, we don't have that same experience of everybody and hearing everybody and being in a room and absorbing all the vibrations, but we can still have that sense of connection. So I'll start it off and then you can be doing it alongside me in your own homes. And some mantras we do, they sort of have a tune, they're a melody, and it's a little bit more like singing or devotional singing. And there's something about those mantras that's very beautiful and kind of can open our hearts. And sometimes they're in harmonies, and that can also be really beautiful. But there's another level where we're just chanting it on one note, just repeating it again and again and again. It's not about music, it's not about melody, it's sort of much more primal. And if we chant a mantra, it's something that we're doing with our bodies, you know. And our bodies are creating the sort of soundbox. We can feel the vibrations in our bodies when we chant. You know, we're producing sound as well. And we can hear the sounds we're producing and we can feel the sounds we're producing, yeah. So, especially since we are more by ourselves, that's one of the advantages of Zoom, is no one can hear you. You know, so if you're a bit self-conscious about your voice or whether you've got it in tune or whether you're doing it right or the pronunciation's right, nobody can hear you. So just go for it. You know, you'll get a much richer experience if you give it a bit of welly than if you're sort of like mumbling it away. Yeah. So we'll do the Amitabha mantra just on the plain note for a while and then let it fade away, and then we'll have a period of meditation. And then we're going to end with a threefold puja, which is a sort of ritual where we're, in a way, paying our respects to the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha, and expressing our intention that we want to become like the Buddha, and we want to go on that journey too. So if you just want to get yourself in a meditation posture, we'll do a period of the Amitabha mantra, and you can just listen to me and join in when you feel like it. And if you don't want to join in, again, nobody will notice or hear, so it's up to you whether you join in or not. But especially if you haven't done mantra chanting before, or if you've been a little bit reluctant to do it, just give it a go and see what happens. Yeah.
Oh.
Om Amidevahi.
Om Amide.
Om Amidevah 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 So we'll have a period of meditation now for about 20 minutes. And you can do the meditation of your choice. And I'll just ring bells, I won't lead it. You may just want to sit, do some just sitting, absorbing, being with your experience. You may want to do some mindfulness practice, focusing on the body and the breath, or some kindness practice, it's up to you. So we're going to end the evening with a short ritual called a threefold puja. So I know some of you haven't been on retreat before, some of you may never have come across a puja before, just meditated, not done any rituals. As I said, the ritual gives us an opportunity maybe to practice in a different kind of a way. In a bit more of an emotional way, perhaps. It's something we do with our body, our speech, and our mind. And there's usually an opportunity to express our gratitude, our respect to the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha in any ritual. But not, as I said, the Buddha. He had this particular experience and he gave us all these teachings and practices so that we could follow in his footsteps. So we're not worshipping as something that's far above us that we can never hope to become like the Buddha. In a way, if we're practicing the Dharma, we're on the Buddhist path. It's because we want to develop our potential, our full potential, to be more and more like the Buddha, develop more and more of those qualities that he had, or the insights he had. And there's a lot of teachings about how we all do have those qualities within us, even if they're not fully developed, that we all do have seeds or Buddha nature within us. That through practice and the right conditions can grow and bear fruit and blossom. So the Threefold Puja sets of verses. So there's just one at the beginning called Opening Reverence, where we're basically reverencing the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And after that, we're going to do a mantra, and I thought we'd do the mantra of the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni. Because in a way, he was like the key condition without which none of us would be here on this retreat right now. Because without the Buddha, without him sharing the teachings, we wouldn't be here. The second section is called Reverence to the Three Jewels, and there's three verses. One expressing reverence to the Buddha, one expressing reverence to the Dharma, the teachings and the truth, and one to the Sangha, the sort of spiritual community. And after that, we'll have a reading. The third section, we've also got three verses. Reverencing and making offerings to the three jewels this time of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And traditional offerings, in at least in our imagination, we can do, and that are associated with those. And at the end of that, we'll have another mantra, and I thought we would do Amitabha mantra, but a more melodic version of the Amitabha mantra. So basically, we've got the opening reverence, Amitabha mantra, we've got the reverence of the three jewels and a reading and the offerings to the Buddha, and then the Amitabha mantra again. And when that fades away, that'll mark the end of this evening. So if you happen to have a shrine, or somewhere, and you want to make an offering of some kind, you can do that at any point during this little ritual, but you might want to do it during the mantras. So if you've got a candle to light, or a bit of incense, or maybe you've got something beautiful you just want to put on your shrine of some kind. You may not have a shrine, but you may have a place that you like to sit at that's beautiful. And when we're making offerings, in a way, we're just expressing our gratitude, our respect. So what I need is if somebody'd be willing to do the ritual with me, because again, we're going to do it in call and response, where I'll say a line and then you repeat after me. So call and response, in a way, is also a symbolic metaphor of doing a practice, because you hear the call and you respond. You know, we come into contact with the Dharma, whether it's through a teaching or through a practitioner or any other way, and something at some point in all our lives must have touched us, otherwise we wouldn't be here. Yeah. So, anybody feel like being my partner in the Threefold Puja? It's all in English. There's no difficult words.
I'm happy to do it over you there.
Is that you, Patty?
Yes.
Okay, great, thanks. Well, okay, then. Threefold Puja, opening reverence. We reverence the Buddha,
We reference the Buddha,
the perfectly enlightened one,
the perfectly enlightened one,
the shower of the way.
the shower of the way.
We reverence the Dharma,
We reverence the Dharma,
the teaching of the Buddha,
the teaching of the Buddha,
which leads from darkness to light.
which leads from darkness to light.
We reverence the Sangha,
We reverence the Sangha,
the fellowship of the Buddha's disciples,
the fellowship of the Buddha's disciples
that inspires and guides.
that inspires and guides.
Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni 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 Chagyamuni Swaha. Reference to the Three Jewels. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
And aspire to follow him.
And aspire to follow him.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome.
What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome.
What the Buddha attained, we too can attain.
What the Buddha attained, we too can attain.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
The truth in all its aspects.
The truth in all its aspects.
The path in all its stages.
The path in all its stages.
We aspire to study.
We aspire to study.
Practice.
Practice.
Realize.
Realize.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
As one by one, we make our own commitment.
As one by one, we make our own commitment.
An ever-widening circle.
An ever-widening circle.
The Sangha grows.
The Sangha grows.
Just as is the case with the sesame seed being the cause of the oil and milk being the cause of butter, but where the oil is not obtained without pressing and the butter is not obtained without churning, so all sentient beings, even though they possess the actual essence of Buddhahood, will not realize Buddhahood without engaging in practice. offerings to the Buddha. Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer flowers.
We offer flowers.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer candles.
We offer candles.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
From his greater lamp.
From his greater lamp.
A lesser lamp we light within us.
A lesser lamp we light within us.
The lamp of Bodhi shining within our hearts.
The lamp of Bodhi shining within our hearts.
Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer incense.
We offer incense.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
Sweeter than incense.
Sweeter than incense.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world.
Om Ami Deva Hri. 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 Okay, so we're going to end there. Thank you all for coming, practicing together. And hope to see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock.